This is Power Athlete Radio. With your host, Denny Kaye, Professor Booty, and the Luke Summers. And now, toes forward, hips locked, shoulders set, and retract those scapulas. It's time for some knowledge bombs.
Sound familiar? It's because they are basically the DeVito Schwarzenegger combo of the CrossFit Strongman Specialty Seminar. Similar to our very own CrossFit Football, these coaches travel the world in an attempt to introduce the masses to lifting awkward shit. No Atlas stone goes unturned as we dive straight into how Rob got started in this racket and his first impression of Logan, a young noob with an ego and subsequently a torn biceps tendon. Find out how Logan was able to shape his gym around the philosophies and practices that he learned from Rob at his first Strongman seminar. And you hear Strongman, but apparently it's all about the ladies. That's right, Rob explains how and why the seminar is geared towards the female population. Then comes the science. How many Strongman injuries have these guys seen over the years? The number is going to surprise you. Find out why the misconceptions swirling around the sport are actually just a bunch of bullshit. Do you like getting stronger? Of course you do. Well, if you've never tried the cold bar method, as explained by Rob in this episode, prepare to have your mind blown. This is taking linear progression to a whole new level. Let's be honest, with this many strongmen in one episode, things are bound to get a little hot, heavy, and awkward. This is episode 105.
What's up, Power Athlete Nation? Welcome to the premier podcast in strength and conditioning, Power Athlete Radio. This is Denny. I got the Power Athlete coaches, John, Luke, Tex, and Callie on the horn. And today our guests are Rob Orlando and Logan Gilbreck. What's happening, guys?
What's up, guys?
How's everybody doing?
I gotta say, dude, we talked yesterday, just real quick, but happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much, man. I made it to 40. It's a milestone.
It's all over, dude. It's all over.
Don't they say life begins at 40?
I'm looking at life like a bell curve, and I'm just starting to get towards the top.
Fred Hatfield squatted a grand at 43.
Yeah, so, what the fuck are you doing, Rob?
He squatted a grand at 43. I'm 41, and maybe
you need to get two more years, Denny.
Squat a grand.
You got two more years. You'll be fine. You'll make it.
Yeah, right? I keep following Field Strong. I'm kicking ass. I'll get there. So how's everybody doing? Luke's out in the field somewhere, right? He's, like, hunting turkeys.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Still alive, everybody? I'm in Savannah, Illinois, about 10 miles off the Mississippi River. Bagged myself a turkey this morning. No big deal.
Dude, that was a pretty solid. I wake up this morning, and there's a text message with a picture of Luke with this pretty gnarly turkey. That's a pretty big tom, huh?
Yeah, man. They're. It was crazy. It's the craziest hunt I've ever been on. Just how they get up and basically attack these decoys. And at the end of the day, like, they're the ugliest fucking bird I've ever seen, man. They look like half velociraptor, half fucking rooster. They're ugly.
Dude, we used to go turkey hunting back in the Midwest, and the funniest is they would set out these, like, female decoys, and the males would go over and basically be taking the decoy to town. They'd be humping them, and you'd literally stand up and, like, you know, stand up. These things would look right at you, and they wouldn't stop. And
I'm like American Psycho style?
Yeah, like totally looking over you, like, make eye contact. He's just trying to put an arrow through his neck.
Oh, my God.
I was like, he's pretty aggressive birds.
And a turkey came out of a tree line. I was hoping it was a deer, but it ended up to be a turkey. And the fucker flew. Have you ever seen one of those fly?
They're like, they don't really fly. It's kind of like a big hop.
8 feet.
Well, yeah. No, they. So they. they roost up in the trees at night, so they're away from predators at night. And then in the morning, they pop off and they fly out. And they fly, you know, they can fly like we saw a couple of them take off today and flew easily 50 feet, 100 feet. But they're huge.
No idea they had that technology.
Benny, did you kill him anyway?
I was too busy shitting my pants, man, because that thing scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
What
are we talking about?
Well, no, right,
a little honey. I mean, Luke actually got turkeys this weekend. Last weekend, I took down 200-300-pound-plus pigs.
So, yeah, I saw that. That's awesome.
Yeah,
we're trying to. We're getting all the species for Power Athlete Nation. We're gonna feed everybody thousands of pounds of boar and then like 10 pounds of turkey.
How many pandas?
The processor called me yesterday, and I think my one pig was like 112 pounds, like fully just carcass, fully dressed, and the other one was like 90 and change. And then the two guys that I went hunting with decided they didn't want their pigs, and so they threw it on mine. So the guy's like, "You have four pigs. Jeez. You have well over 400 pounds of meat." I'm like, pack that shit up. We're going to get it. So they're processing it right now.
Wow. I'm glad we could fulfill the National Geographic portion of this podcast.
just because you don't have anything to contribute.
No, I haven't killed anything today, so I'm already like minus
well,
one.
Well, the day is young.
Thank God I edit this podcast. You guys you guys are awful. Okay, let's get into something relevant. Rob,
yeah.
Let's chat with you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be in the position that you are with both Hybrid Athletics and Strongman, and your connection to Logan as well.
Yeah, sure. So I've been I've been working out since I was about 12 or 13 years old. I just always gravitated to it. When I was, 13, my father gave me a pull-up bar for my birthday. When I was 14, I got a bench press set, and you know, I always liked it, so it was just something that I did. It became part of my life really early. Over the years, people ask me, like, who were my influences and who kind of got me into it. And the truth is, nobody really. I never read, you know, magazines. I didn't look at the bodybuilding stuff. I just did it because I liked it. I got off on it. And over the course of, you know, 4 years of high school, I managed to put on a little bit of size and strength and went away to college and just kept working out. I actually moved into a dorm specifically because they had the newest gym at the University of Connecticut. I majored in exercise science. I've just been a part of it literally since I can remember. Graduated college, and I was looking for something to do. I had never done any powerlifting. I had never competed in any kind of strength sport, and just stumbled upon a strongman contest that was sanctioned by North American Strongman. I entered as a novice, and I won the competition, and I set a couple of North American records at the time, and you know, the rest is kind of history. Where I fell in love with that awkward style of training, and just a departure from the barbell, but it just fit my personality, and it fit lifting heavy. That was always my thing. So, you know, fast forward a couple of years, and I was personal training. And I was going from house to house, and I saw the value of my own training and the things that I was doing, but I couldn't really share that with my personal training clients because they were, you know, I was going to their houses, so they weren't going to store tires at their house, and they weren't going to store axles and all the other toys that I needed to play with. So when the opportunity was there for me to open up Hybrid Athletics, I jumped in, and you know, we opened up the gym, and I brought all of my personal training clients into my own place where I had all of my own toys. And, you know, we are a CrossFit style facility where we do a lot of CrossFit style programming and rep schemes, but we just use a lot of strongman equipment because it's so valuable to our members, and it's so valuable as a training source. So that's kind of my history with, you know, in 3 minutes or less, that's my history, how I got involved. I met Logan, God, now it's got to be 2-3 years ago at a strongman seminar that we did at Ethos. And about 10 minutes into the seminar, when we were doing the tire flip, after about 5 minutes earlier, I had told everybody to be very careful, that they had to be very careful about their biceps, and the bicep is the weak link in strongman. Logan ruptured his bicep on the tire flip.
What?
Yeah.
Noob.
That's a great introduction, Logan.
Well, Rob, so, I'm good about mentioning that just about every time we're together, so I'm used to it.
So I walked over to him. I see him with his arm kind of dangling there, and I said, "What's that? What happened?" He goes, "I heard a big pop," and there, you could see the separation down at the distal end of the bicep. And I said, "You know," and now I feel guilty. I feel horrible. He's like, "No, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it." He spent the rest of the day. He went through the entire seminar, just kind of icing the arm and watching and listening. And I reached out to him a couple times after the seminar to make sure that that I just circled back and I told him that he can come back and do the seminar anytime he wanted to and participate. And it just kicked off a good friendship. And when I talked to him several months later, he said that the seminar was really powerful for him because it kind of checked off all the boxes. And I'll let him jump in and explain what that meant. Go ahead, Logan.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, like the straw man thing was a little bit, I arrived at it kind of in the opposite fashion that Rob did. You know, my kind of strength and conditioning background is in team sports. I was a baseball player. And so, you know, I originally got excited about CrossFit on a more like, ideological level. Like, it made sense. I geeked out on, like, the What is Fitness article side of things. I personally, like, wasn't super pumped after my career about just living in a gym and like feeling like shit in the middle of workouts. But, you know, the need to like have this quality of training in your life like checked out for me. Like Rob said, it kind of checked off some key boxes in terms of like the whys and the purpose. And so Strongman like surprisingly did that as well. You know, and I think that's one of the biggest jobs we have with the seminar is speaking to like what we all think of it as, you know, this very fringe modality that's, you know, relevant to just a small portion of the population, specifically very strong men, right? And then kind of extrapolating that out and like, hey, maybe there's some things about this training that is not only just like fun and cool, but also important and critical to kind of the goal, which, you know, I think a lot of coaches forget or like shy away from this idea that like people are knocking on your door because they want to get fit and look better and feel better and strong. And Strongman has this kind of really cool way of like accessing intensity and load like almost immediately, right? Whereas like, you know, we talk a lot about some of the other more technical lifts. We don't really subscribe to the idea that like people come out of the womb with like this idea that the muscle up is like something in their DNA or like the hang snatch is something that like we all just know how to do. Whereas like we can take these pretty like rudimentary tools and include carries, pushing, pulling, flipping, and get virtually anybody that stimulus like right here, right now. And so for me, that was like too much to ignore in terms of like, you know, being a gym owner, being a coach, etc. And so that's kind of where I grabbed on or latched on to the strongman thing.
Yeah. Rob, let me kind of pull from what Logan just said and ask you. I mean, one of the things that we struggle with in CrossFit football is the fact that our program system, the name, is somewhat of a misnomer. And I think that you guys can have some of the same challenges when it comes to attracting a wide group of people or casting a wide net with a name like, Strongman or Strongman. I mean, can you speak to any of like the myths or anything out there that you think people associate with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, what we see at our seminars, and I don't know if you guys experience the same thing, but what we see at our seminars is if we have 40 attendees, we'll have two or three women. And we tend to bias so heavily towards the men. But the interesting thing is that if you read the feedback and you actually pay attention, that our seminar is designed for women. And the women who do attend our seminar rave about it and often come back and do it again because it's so empowering. Where, you know, the increases that an athlete might find in doing squat snatches, you're talking ounces at a time, where if I can get a female athlete to carry a yoke that's 2 or 2.5 times her body weight, the feeling of achievement that happens right after that is just incredible. And the women who attend our seminar walk out completely different women than they walked in. So the feedback is so powerful. And I always tell the coaches that our seminar is designed for women, because for men, they come in and it's a pissing contest. Everybody just loads up the bars and, you know, it's a natural fit.
Yeah, everybody just wants to tear their biceps tendon, and it's crazy.
It happens. It happens, especially to taller guys with long hair. But yeah, we see it all the time in our seminars that we have to fight that myth. In fact, one of the things that we discussed at the board, one of the first things we talk about is, you know, when we say the word strongman, what are some things that pop into people's minds? And you know, the consistency is gigantic men doing crazy things. It's like a circus show. And the truth is, the actual truth is that strongman is nothing more than a series of movements, and those movements are hardwired into our DNA as human beings.
Yeah, and so Logan, you know, you're a great example of somebody who went to the seminar and then was just like, oh, this sort of fits what I understand human movement to be. And, you know, whether it's from your athletics background where you know movement not to be confined to just barbell things, or athleticism is not just what we can do in the weight room, it can be these awkward movements and your ability to sort of adapt immediately to those things. I mean, how do you feel as a gym owner, you know, implementing this into your training style? How has it affected your Gen Pop? How has it affected, you know, membership? And I know that you have a great location, so you've even kind of commented on how it can attract people because it looks interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the intangible stuff too, like going back to what Rob was talking about, how this might have like checked off some boxes for me. Like, you know, one of those intangible things that I think is too great to ignore is like, one, the fun element of this, and then the other is like this kind of aesthetic, you know. And so there's a thing about like a keg, for example, that, you know, whatever it is, mid training session, when you look down and you're kind of, you know, having that conversation with yourself, you see a keg and it kind of it eases the burden of the training, whereas maybe the barbell can get a bit old, right? It's also inspiring for other people too. You know, we're right there on Lincoln, one of the, you know, just busiest streets in LA, and cars are, you know, throwing on their brakes. We've had a few rear enders with, you know, because people are checking out women putting kegs over their head and, you know, doing crazy shit that is inspiring for people. It makes people like ask weird questions about themselves. That was like one of my biggest observations. You know, like little crowds will form at the gate there, and people are watching other people do, you know, fitness, but they're watching people with this perspective that's like, wait, how do I feel about this? Could I do this? What's my position in this thing? Like, okay, so am I stronger than that person? What does that mean about me? And there's this weird dialogue that happens in people's heads that, like, either sends people towards it or away from it, and it's kind of a powerful thing, I think.
Yeah.
Logan, I'm curious, did you open your gym before you attended Rob's seminar?
Man, no, I think I attended the seminar beforehand. Yeah, that was probably like 3 years ago. The gym's almost 2 years old. But we, you know, we had an outdoor fitness school that was essentially the same thing without an address, right? And it was outside, and we had barbells and sandbags and the whole thing going. So we had a community, a very full community, and we had a very full program, and this kind of just reinforced some directional things for me.
My question would be, could you offer any advice for any listeners that want to attend the seminar and then start to implement this into the program in terms of, these are new movements, it's a different approach, any way that our listeners could kind of learn from your experience?
Yeah, of course. Like that, like I said, you know, I think a lot of people sign up for the seminar to put their hands on Atlas stones and flip tires, and, you know, as they should. I personally, this is just my biased approach to the thing. When I coach the seminar, the first, you know, hour is where I think the juice is, and that's basically a conversation about, like, why. And if we can do a good job as to explaining why this is something worth looking at, worth implementing, then people will do that, you know. And so that process is a lot easier than people think. You know, strongman equipment is generally inexpensive. The utility is extremely high. And so, you know, we encourage people to have, like, you know, a few basic things and then include it into their training, especially in, like, a GPP fashion or, like, a CrossFit fashion, you know, as much as you're doing anything else. You know, the easy thing to do would be to show up at the seminar, and then, you know, if you're one of the passionate folks that wants to go out and, you know, buy the kit and have all the gear, the easiest thing to do would be for that to sit kind of in the corner, and you have a strongman Saturday or something like that. It's a very common thing. But I think something that, like, Hybrid Athletics has done really well, you know, Deuce has done really well, is that, you know, it's this kind of ubiquitous thing where, you know, people touch the gymnastics rings just as much as they touch sandbags, just as much as they touch the axle, etc. And so that kind of comes from the top, you know, am I willing to just consider these things just as important as everything else, and then to, you know, include it alongside, you know, all your Metcons or whatever the case may be. In terms of, like, easy ways to do that, I usually coach people, especially if they're, like, worried about the impression that some of these things would have, is basically to start with heavy carries. You know, you can add in you know, what does an AMRAP with double unders and pull-ups and push-ups feel like? What does that feel like with, you know, a 50-foot bodyweight carry amongst those movements, right? And so that's an easy way to do it. You know, a lot of the implements that we use mimic movements that are already in there, you know, so now you're looking at very familiar CrossFit-y things, you know, like Elizabeth with a stone instead of a barbell, or whatever the case may be, you know. And so that top down, this is important, and I'm going to include it with the same weight and attention as anything else, is, like, I think the key to that.
So if I may just jump in here and ask Rob, you know, that's a great segue to, I mean, Rob, you've been known to be, to do some of the benchmark workouts with unusual objects, right? Or strongman more style equipment. You know, can you talk about the value of that and its transference to getting your hands around a barbell and just, you know, obviously anybody who has worked with strongman stuff, we just know how grip intensive, how much tensile strength it requires. And then obviously when you put something convenient into your hands, it's much easier. But can you kind of speak to that and what, you know, what you found in terms of, like, numbers or results or things like that with other athletes?
Yeah, I mean, from my own personal experience, I went and listened to Coach Glassman speak at my level one long time ago, and he started talking about constant variety executed at high intensity, and to me that just dovetailed so perfectly with the kind of the strongman movement and modalities that I thought maybe it's probably good for me to depart from the barbell. Like, even on these CrossFit workouts where it's, you know, Fran is 21:15:9 with a 95-pound barbell, but what if I did it with a 135-pound Atlas stone? What if I, you know, what if I just stimulate my body? Doesn't it fit the model of large load, long distance, quickly, like constant variety? Like, it all kind of blended together. So I'm not afraid to, I think it's Nancy, right, which is a 1K row, 50 thrusters, and then 30 pull-ups. So I think that's the right one. Yeah, so, you know, like, I did Nancy at 225 pounds just because. And that's the kind of stuff that, like, I'm not afraid to get involved in a workout that it might take me, it completely departs from what the workout is designed to be, and I realize that, but I'm not afraid to jump in and do that kind of thing. We issue a challenge at a bunch of our seminars where we talk about any workout where you're doing any kind of pulling at all, use an axle for a month straight. and then go back to, you know, some of your benchmarks with a barbell. Just see what happens to your hands. See what happens to your grip strength. All the pull-up bars at Hybrid Athletics are 2 inches thick. So when my athletes go and train or they do another competition or they drop it out of a box somewhere else and they grab, you know, the Spiel pull-up bar, it feels like they're holding a pencil. So, you know, what they'll find is that automatically the pull-up numbers go up, the chest bar numbers go up, so it has instant transference over to, you know, to increasing your CrossFit ability. So it's just one of those things that we kind of do seamlessly, and we do it without much thought. But other people, you know, other gyms, they're kind of they look at us like we're not following the CrossFit program. But to me, it just seems like it fits the CrossFit variety model.
Right, and well, you know what? The joke's on them now because we're seeing more and more competitions where axle bars are being used for, you know, traditional barbell movements, right? So it's kind of funny. So there's that element of preparation now at this point where it's like incumbent upon the athlete to be ready for that type of thing.
Yeah, we've seen incredible adoption from the CrossFit community just to absorb new movements. You know, I talked to some of the guys at HQ a long, long time ago, and they said, you know, what's your end goal here? And I said, I want to see Atlas Stones in a main site workout on CrossFit.com. You know, we see images of strongman movements and poise on CrossFit, but I want to see the actual workout of like 30 stone to shoulder at body weight or 30 stone to shoulder at 175, something like that, in a CrossFit workout. And to me, that will be just a gigantic victory, because up until you know, our introduction into the CrossFit world and kind of introducing these movements to a much broader audience, strongman was relegated to a couple of, you know, garages and closet competitions. It doesn't have a mass audience. There aren't big sponsors. There's just not a lot of momentum behind it. So the CrossFit community has done a great job at adopting some of these movements, and you know, we are making progress.
You know, the interesting thing too is they're pretty easy to adopt once you get an idea of I think ultimately people look at strongman and think it's the high risk of injury, but one of the things that really resonated with me when I went and Logan did my seminar was that it's kind of like one of those things where you tear the item off the ground and you either get the lift or you don't. It's not like the keg's not going to get above your waist if you can't clean it. Your body's not going to, you know, your body's not going to just magically like find a way or, you know, it's not like it's not typically something that is done without a violent extension. It either happens or it doesn't. And that really, it does two things. It ultimately, like, it helps kind of teach people to be violent with weights or more traditional barbell movements, but it also, it does it at a relatively low risk, you know, assuming you don't, like, tear your biceps tendon. But,
you know, it's really interesting to hear you say that because, to me, we get this question all the time, like, isn't this going to hurt my lower back when I do Atlas Stones or, you know, isn't this this yoke, is this going to hurt whatever, X, Y, and Z? And the truth is that with all the seminars that we've done and all the different people that we've trained, literally from, you know, 65 to 70-year-old women all the way down to, we had a 12-year-old boy at one of our seminars in Pennsylvania. You know, we run the gamut in terms of who we're coaching. We have yet, and this is an odd statistic, but we have yet to see a single lower back injury on any Atlas Stone that we've ever done.
And yeah.
You, like, I've seen people hurt their lower backs warming up for deadlifts, warming up for snatches. We have seen at our seminars, we've seen two injuries. There's been 9 ruptured biceps and 1 ruptured Achilles. And usually, they're all by the biggest, strongest guy at the seminar, and it's because
he's an athlete. Thank you, appreciate
that. Hold off on that until I finish the comment, because usually it's the guy who's 6'3", 275 pounds. He thinks he's a lot stronger than he is, and he goes right at the 1,000-pound tire after the breakout and pops his bicep. So it's... You know, there's a little bit of an ego thing there. We just haven't seen the injuries that you would expect or that people would expect after doing these movements at the different loads that we use them. To me, it's self-governing. You either can or can't. There's not like, oh, well, I hurt myself because I was half doing it. It's just not the case.
Right, and that kind of like – the way you guys set it up too, and kind of work the progressions of, okay, we're going to get the hands around an Atlas stone, we're going to deadlift it off the ground, then we're going to lap it, and we go through those progressions. But the thing is, you know, if your hands and your forearms can't even hold onto the object, there's absolutely no way that your lower back can take the strain of something that your limiting factor is restricting, if that makes sense, you know? Whereas like a barbell, I mean, I might be able to just grab something and tear it off the ground and be capable grip-wise, but my lower back is going to be that limiting factor, you know? It like you said, it is very self-governing in that aspect.
Yep, no doubt.
The implements, too, are really good teachers in that way. Like, something I like to bring up in the seminars is, like, you know, people are motivated by failure more than anything, in my opinion, in the gym. And so these implements kind of demand, you know, the way you're talking about it, it's like a governor. You know, they demand certain things, whereas, like, say the barbell, to use that example, doesn't. You know, we talk a lot about you know, the log will put somebody in the position to dip and drive in like a push press or a jerk better than they ever had in their life, because you can go through your life up until this point dealing with a barbell and, you know, include some forward inclination or whatever the case may be that has gone, say, like unpunished until this moment, right? And you can have a coach in the corner saying, hey, I'm seeing you a little forward in the dip, let's stay back. And to that you could say, well, thanks for the tip, coach, but I just nailed that 105-pound
right.
jerk. I'm the man or whatever. And
right.
Now all of a sudden you have somebody who hasn't maybe learned that lesson yet with a log that puts the load so far out in front of your center of mass, any forward inclination. Now the log is down or the lift is missed, and people are like, well, I don't like how that feels. What's the deal, you know? And so mm-hmm. The feedback loop is huge, you know. Also with the injury thing, you know, you could take probably the worst front squatter in the room and have them front squat with a sandbag or some other, you know, odd load like this, and you'll see some of the best movement you've seen because of this just general understanding of, like, tension, you know. And so this tension that, like, protects them and also makes them a kind of higher performing individual is, like, required of even holding the load in that front, like, front carry position, you know? And so now you're looking at, like, these things that we like to say are dangerous or, you know, for the only the fringe athlete, are actually things that we can't wait to put into the hands of beginners, because it's actually, you know, in and of itself, like a coach, you know?
Yeah, so, that's super cool. It is like a task specific attention that you need for something like you said, front squatting a sandbag is completely different than if I were to, like, say I was a novice front squatter and I just, like, let it rest in my clavicle. My wrist is totally fucking, you know, bent back, maybe in a position that's hurting me because it's new. I'm assuming this is all normal, natural, right? And it's just, you know, like, there's no tension, there's no neutral grip, there's no feeling and understanding of just, like, the mechanics of the movement itself. And yeah, like you said, a lot of things can kind of go unnoticed in using, like, that traditional style approach. You know, Rob, I'm just curious, like, with your experience over time, I mean, how would you progress strongman? Like, what's a good approach to, like, I mean, just in terms of weights, to progress your ability? Do you change implements? Do you start with a basic implement and then move on to more complex? I mean, how do you approach that? Do you take, like, other things that, you know, kind of interest me is, like, it's the log, right? You call it the log, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that something that you would introduce with just anyone right off the bat, or would you start with something that is, like, closer to center of mass, or, you know, like, how do you progress these different exercises?
Well, you know, we introduce them the same way that we do everything else. So if we're doing a muscle-up progression or we're doing a log progression to, you know, we don't have an on-ramp at Hybrid Athletics. We don't have a specific, like, you know, 4 to 8, 10, 12 sessions of here, you're going to learn everything you need to know in the next 2 or 3 months. We just don't do that. What we do is we put stuff up on the board, and then we have multiple coaches in the room that if today's your first day doing the log, we're going to go break this thing down in the corner. And then, you know, what we found over time was that the 70-pound log that we were making with Rogue was just a little bit too heavy for some of our females out there. So we had to create an eight-inch log that was like 48 pounds, and now everybody can do it. So we bring the equipment to a point where it's accessible for everybody. But then the movement, the beauty, one of the greatest things that I think about the strongman world is that the movements are learned so quickly. Mm-hmm. That if you're day one and you walk into the gym and I'm like, all right, well, we're going to do snatch today, and you've never held a barbell before, or we're going to do clean and press with the log, I can get you, regardless of your fitness level, I can get you to do a clean and press with an empty log, and it'll look pretty damn good in just a few minutes. I can't say the same for the snatch. So the beauty of the strongman movements is how quickly they're learned. But if we're looking at progression, my programming for myself and for my gym is completely and utterly random. I don't look at it like this is a chunk of 4, 8, 10 week program. I don't look at anything like that. We program for our gym at 9 o'clock at night for whatever we're gonna do tomorrow. And we have a little bit of a formula, and it's only because people have asked us so many times that we came up with a formula on how we actually develop our workouts. But we're not looking into the future, because I can't possibly predict how my 150 members are going to feel on day 14. I can't. There's too many variables. So instead, we look back over the last couple of weeks. We look and see what time domains haven't we done, what movements haven't we done, and then we backfill the system to create a workout that's unique. The way we program in our gym and the progressions that we use, it's probably a little bit different than most. Most are probably a little bit more structured than we are, but you know, our members like it because it is truly random. But that's kind of how we program and we progress through these different movements. If you're a 62-year-old woman who's 100 pounds overweight, and today we have log cleaner press on the board, you're going to get a log cleaner press demonstration, and we're going to figure out how to do it.
Yeah. Can you just kind of segue into, eventually getting to cold bar status? Tell us where the whole idea for cold bar training came in, and, you know, what sort of influenced that idea and what it is to our listeners.
Yeah. So the cold bar is a unique concept that I read a book about these monks, and as part of their training, they would they dug a very shallow hole in their backyard, in their training ground, and it was, you know, like 12 inches deep, and they would stand inside this hole multiple times per day. They would stand inside this hole and they would meditate, then they would jump out of the hole, and over time they would get to the point where, and they would dig this hole deeper over time, but the increments in depth were really, really small, and the time was really, really long. So over months and months and months, this hole would get progressively deeper. They would get to the point where they were standing in a hole that was like neck deep, and they would center themselves, and they would better, they would jump out. So I had a bench press set up in my basement. And I thought, I wonder if you could apply that kind of slow, methodical training to a barbell. And I put 225 pounds on the bar, and to me, that represented the very shallow hole, which is something that I can do no matter what. If you kept me up for 5 consecutive days and I had been drinking for 5 consecutive days, I could still lay down on the bench without a warm-up, without stretching, without thinking about it, and do it for one rep. And what I did over the course of the next 6 months was slowly add weight. And it wasn't, there was no thought-out program. I never, ever thought that I'm going to add 5 pounds next week and 10 pounds the week after. I never did that. It was completely random. I would add weight when I felt like the weight had gotten so easily that my body had adapted.
Yeah, that's the slowest linear progression ever. Just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. So what I would do, too, is I would do it randomly throughout the course of the day. So I'd be sitting there on a Sunday watching golf on television, and as I'm literally flipping through the channels, I'd be like, oh, the impulse would hit my head, oh, you should go bench one rep. I would pause the TV, walk down the stairs, take the bar out of the rack without a warm-up, take it, bench it, rack it back up, and go back upstairs. And at the end of the day, maybe I've done 7 reps. And then the next day I did 10 reps. The next day I was traveling, so I didn't do any reps. The next day I came in, I did 5 reps. At the end of the week, I've done 50 reps. At the end of the month, I've done 200 reps. So you start to see this accumulation of work over time. And that was really what I was interested in. What I saw was that in about 6 months, I went from 225 pounds to 425 pounds, stone cold at 5 o'clock in the morning in my pajamas. I could roll out of bed and bench 425 with a two-second pause.
Dude,
that's badass. So there's video, right?
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube. Literally, I'm in my sweatpants. I walked down. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, set up my camera, and did a bench at 405 with a full-second pause.
Shut up.
Here's the cool thing, is that at the end, I was still doing the same volume. So at the end of a given week, I had done 40 reps with 405. At the end of a given week, I had done 50 reps with 425. So you start adding up the accumulated weight moved, and the adaptation is incredible. The bonus, too, is that anytime a workout came up, any pressing event, anything came up where I had to do 315, it was a joke.
Right.
It was an afterthought. So the adaptation for me was unbelievably powerful. So then we set up a deadlift bar. Same idea, same concept. We started with 315. We left the bar just sitting right next to the gym door. So you would walk in, drop your backpack, put your coffee down, and deadlift at once. And throughout the course of the day, I would just walk. I'd be in the middle of a conversation with somebody. I'd walk over, grab the bar, pull it, put it back down, and back to whatever I was doing. At the end of a given week, I'd done 50 reps. At the end of a given month, I'd done a couple hundred reps. And my weight went from 315 to 585 in just a few months. Wow. And I was doing that stone cold 5 to 10 times a day.
Can you remind people, too, just your height and weight, just in case they're not familiar with your height and weight?
Well, I'm 5'8 on a very tall day. and I'm right now, for the last, I'd say, almost 4 years, I've been about 190 pounds.
Okay, cool.
So what happened when you stopped?
I stopped on the bench because I got bored. I was just kind of losing my enthusiasm to do it.
Bored with getting stronger?
Well, no, I mean, but think about it. Like, I always wonder if, like, all of a sudden now, if you were to go back and lay down, could you still do that 425?
No, but the adaptation was strong enough that I've gone back to the bench after not benching for, you know, as long as I take breaks for, and I can, without question, I can do 365. So the goal, like, if I were to look forward and say, all right, I'm going to set up a cold bar again, I can imagine within a month or two, I'd be right back at doing 425.
Right. The base level of strength is still higher. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So maybe there's something to, like, you know, the constant needling effect where it's like,
I'd call this
annoying,
nagging.
Hey Rob, did you have any of your other coaches or training partners doing the cold bar stuff with you, or were going solo?
No, we have a cold bar set up in our gym right now that has, like, I think 475 on it. So it's just, we had one set up for women at one time, too. The hard part for women was that we had a bunch of women that wanted to do it, and the bar started at, like, 135, and over time, I think it got up to around 265, and there were women that just, they couldn't quite hang with the speed that the bar was going up. But for the guys, I mean, we've had it where there's, I don't know, 7 or 8 guys in our gym that'll walk in stone cold and pull 500. But the bar, what ends up happening always is that our cleaning guy comes in and breaks down the damn bar. So now we have a sign on it that says, don't break it down, just leave it there.
God, he is a fun slayer. Holy shit.
But, one of the things that we issue that challenge all the time at our seminars is to try the cold bar. And we've had some unbelievable comments and stories on that. We had a couple guys in, there were 7 people in Australia that tried it, and their deadlift just went through the roof. We just see some very cool statistics, and people always ask, what about the risk of injury? If you're walking right up to a bar that's that heavy, what about the risk of injury? And my thought is that I've done enough reps building up to this point that I never once even had a hint of injury. Not even a little bit, because I had done 200 reps the month before, and I had done several hundred the month before that, and the adaptation was so slow that my body was literally ready at any point, at any time, I could lay down and do it.
You know,
it sounds like our Bulgarian template when we were we had a deal where we were working up to 1 RM push, pull, or press. Like
it got to the point that where you don't warm up.
Well, no, I mean, it got to the point where I think I squatted between like 550 and 650 for singles for like 18
you
days
do like
in
a
row.
You like a and double at like 75.
It was single at 225, single at 405, single at 495, and then I would go right into it. Like I would take like 4 Scott. It's like we were permanently warm, and then you had your 1 RM, then do a couple drops.
And you
sets.
Just know you don't have the energy do it.
Like, you know, like, it's funny that you say that, because I did a CrossFit Total competition with a female partner about a year and a half ago, and my preparation for that was 4 days. It was 4 days. Like, I walked in, I would take out, I'd do one squat at 135, one at 225, one at 315, one at 405, and one at 495. And that entire process took me about 4 minutes. The only change, it was just changing weights. And then the strict press, I did 225, 245, 255. Like, there, and the whole, that entire thing was just unload the plates, put the plates back on. And the deadlift, it was start at 500 and do 550 and get close to 600. From start to finish, I could do the CrossFit Total in less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, you know, the other thing too, I'm kind of like a geek when it comes to the mental aspect. And when you have an approach like this, like the cold bar training, it doesn't give you a lot of time to talk yourself out of the lift, right? So when you're working and doing warm-up sets, or you're sort of progressing, or you're doing, you know, heavy sets of five and you want to end with like a, you know, whatever, you have in your mind, you've already put this pressure on yourself, or you've gleaned something off of the reps that you did warming up, like I'm not fresh or like that felt heavy or whatever. And so a huge part of it is just like, I did this weight yesterday, I pulled it for one, or I did this an hour ago, let's fucking go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the things that I see is that, you know, when we oftentimes when we test our one rep max, do it nearly enough. So there becomes all this negative pressure, and it's like climbing a mountain. It's like climbing a mountain, and what if I can't? What, you start doubting yourself. If when I was benching 425, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, that represented, I don't know, the better part of 90%+ of my one rep max, and I was doing it 50 times a week.
So, well, the other one is, I tell people all the time, I'm like, dude, to get good at 1RMs, you have to lift singles.
Singles, yeah.
Like, don't think that you're going to do, and we've seen people, you know, come off of like a Wendler template where they're like, yeah, I got 17 reps at my 95%. And I'm like looking at them, and I'm like, you know, you start doing the math in your head, and you're like, so you started pretty low. What do you think my 1RM is? And I'm like, it's probably maybe about 5 pounds heavier than you got that 17 reps. And they're like, no way, based on the projection, I should do this. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck how many reps you do. Reps build strength, but at the end of the day, to do a true 1RM, you have to practice that, because that is that one big effort, and if you're used to doing a shit ton of reps. So the fact that you did that program, and it also coincides with another thing we found, is that when it comes to lifting weights, you can recover from intensity. So you can work up to heavy singles.
Yeah, the volume was not that crazy.
It's the volume that kicks
you
in the balls.
Because you can do that every day, the singles every day.
Yeah. And,
I've always, same thing.
It's the running that's the exact opposite.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, so with running, we found the exact opposite. You can recover from the volume. That's why you do tempo runs. But when you run intensity-wise, you can't recover from it as fast. So it's a pretty interesting deal we've noticed.
I've always said that the worst workout for me by far, the one that makes me not be able to walk for days at a time, is Karen. It's 150 wall balls. But if I do, the other day I did 40 reps of back squats at 405, and that didn't do nearly as much damage to me as Karen did.
Right.
It's the volume that gets me, and it's not moving heavy weights. That is not the issue.
We found that in that Bulgarian program, that when we were staying within a very curtailed amount of intensity or volume after like doing a drop set, it's like, hey, we're going to work up to 1 RM, you're going to come back and give me like, you know, 4 doubles at like 85% of that 1 RM, and coming back and kind of mixing and doing like a light medium kind of deal. Everybody was fine. And then all of a sudden, one of our training partners convinced us to do like, hey, let's just try a 20 RM squat. What? And we did it, and everybody got hurt.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck that, dude. And then that's where we realized that, like, if you can keep that intensity real high and, you know, be very smart on the back end with the volume and the accessory and all that other stuff, you can just ride that sucker. And it sounds like what you're doing, it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to work up to this 1 RM on the cold bar, and then I'm going to go over here, I'm going to do 400 push-ups. No, you're like, I'm just gonna fucking push this
mile run, single, mile run, single.
Yeah, it's like, you know, so like people like kind of fuck it up a little bit. It's not like, hey, you went over to, and then decided to do 1,000.
It's not hard enough for
ring dips, because obviously what you're doing is not really training, because you know you're not really working that hard. I guess there's this idea that like you have to have some like physical receipt, and I'm like, just because you're breathing heavy doesn't mean you worked hard.
It just depends on what your goals are.
Dude, I was at the douche today, and I saw people in there doing the fucking Harlem Shake for a workout.
You can't say the douche, because that's the name of...
I said the douche.
I know, the douche. But that's also the name of Logan's gym.
Their place isn't called
douche,
the douche.
Douche.
Yeah. Logan's gym's the douche?
It's called the douche?
Douche gym.
So there's a gym in Newport. It's called the 12.
The 12.
And I call it the douche.
I call it the double. And I'm pretty sure that neither of those are accurate translations that were.
Yeah, it's fine.
It should be dose or some shit.
They have like, imagine like CrossFit meets boot camp without weights and without any idea with a DJ with a head. So like that's your trainer.
That's sweet. Sign me up.
Oh, and so I was there this morning, and
the
workout actually looks like people are doing the Harlem Shake for 30 minutes, because I can't figure out what they're doing. Even though they have everything written on the board, now I always see what they're doing, none of it correlates to what they're doing. It's almost like, oh, I see what you're on your board, and I'm going to ride the exercise.
The more interesting thing is that John is never surprised by this, and he's gone there several times now, and he still is appalled every time. I'm like, what are you, why are you still surprised?
I'll tell you, you know what it is? I'm not mad,
I'm just disappointed.
No, it's like an inherent belief that there's people who want to get better, not just do the Harlem Shake. I think it's hope. It's not like I have this like ice heart that I got like chisel out every day to get out of my door like Kelly Ice Queen Hinsman.
How did you know that? You've been reading my yearbook.
Because there's a drip pan underneath you right now where your heart's melting.
Logan, speaking of your gym, I do want to talk about, you've had a lot of success gaining popularity, not just in the area, like in LA, but nationally. I mean, people know your gym. Shit, we had the guy recently, Daniel at our seminar recently, who was just like such a fanboy of yours, and he's totally going to listen to this podcast. But he, it's just funny because...
Supporting the Logan?
What's the Logan?
The man bun?
No, he wasn't. Okay. No, he was just like a... He was like a Midwestern, just, you know.
Wholesome.
Anyway, he, we got to chatting, and I think most people who do run into you and come to your gym are pretty amazed at, like, what you've built there in terms of from a marketing standpoint and just from, like, a culture standpoint. I mean, what is your approach? What's some of your advice that you would give to people that are just starting gyms or, you know, is it just the Logan effect and no one can replicate it?
No, I'm not, like... Yeah, I don't know. It kind of makes me nervous when you say that, because like, you know, I'm not a marketing person, but people often kind of bring this thing up, and you know, I try to help people with questions whenever I can. But we're kind of just trying to do the right thing, you know. And so on the marketing side, like, I don't know, it all just kind of seems logical to me, and I've tried to figure out what this all means in terms of sharing it with other people. And I think there's like general ideas, and then there's kind of like specific kind of like actionable things. And just on like the general side, like kind of just watching the whole CrossFit thing happen, I just think more people need to figure out ahead of time, like what they are, like what is this thing, you know? And I think a lot of people have arrived at like, you know, some sort of career in fitness or gym ownership or affiliation, because, you know, it kind of goes like, but of course I would open a gym, right? It's like this natural evolution. Like, I'm good at this. It's changed my life. I like it. Like, but of course the next step is affiliation. Of course the next step is the grid league. Of course, you know, it's like all these things kind of evolve and people just jump into them. And so just from like, you know, a foundational standpoint, like, you got to understand, if it's not very clear in your mind as to like what this entity is, like whether it's a business or a program or whatever, then there's no real way for you to communicate that and share that with other people. You know what I mean? Like, I think what y'all do is largely successful, whether you know it or not. It's like very clear in your mind in terms of purpose and intention and what you are, right?
Yeah, so we say, we kind of say, like, you have to put a stake in the ground, you know?
Yeah, and so we're very clear. It's like what we are and what we aren't, you know, and it makes for, I think, a clear message, like, from the get-go, you know? Starting to get into, like, the marketing stuff, you know, I think on a very basic level, a lot of people are doing, like, amazing work around the country and around the world. But, you know, if you're not able to share that or communicate that, then, you know, did it ever really happen? Is this something that you can share with other people or not? You know, I think about all the brilliant weightlifting coaches and powerlifting coaches and gymnastics coaches all around the world that are, like, in a dungeon somewhere that, you know, no one can really access that information. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you kind of got to maybe, like, just wear it a little bit and realize, like, if you want to impact other people, you have to, like, share what's in your head, you know, and that today comes down to, like, simple stuff like social media and wherever, like, you know, people need to see what you're doing, if it's legit, you know, like, that's something you need to share. And then, like, on that general side, like, I think that marketing, you know, just from my experience, is like the market or the people, the consumers, are trying to figure out what it is that you're saying, and they can tell the difference between, like, what you are and this thing that you're trying to brand. Like, and the greater the difference between what you're saying you are and, like, who you actually are is, like, a problem, you know. And so it just comes back to, I think, like, authenticity, you know, like, people get excited about listening to, like, Rob speak and you guys speak, because it's very clear in their minds that you are about, in a very, like, authentic way, what you're talking about, you know. And that seems, like, simple, but I think that's kind of, like, the foundation of it all, you know. On, like, I don't know, maybe more specific or, like, an actionable side to that, like, people always say, like, how do you make your guys' stuff so cool or whatever, you know, like, I don't know, like, Instagram, stupid Instagram shit, mm-hmm. or the blog or whatever. And you know, I came across a guy, I wish I knew his name, who described this very well. And he talks about, like, the taste. And I think we all have, like, a taste, and whether it's, like, in music or clothes or art or whatever the case may be, style. And when you create something, you compare the thing that you created against this taste, right? So if I'm trying to paint something and I think that certain art looks cool and I paint something and it looks like shit, then I need to close the gap, right? I'm not done yet with the painting until it looks less like shit. Well, the same thing is true with, like, writing or something as simple as, like, taking a photo. I think we all know when a sentence sounds like shit or mm-hmm. when a photo doesn't look so great. All that means is you're not done yet, right? Not that, like, you're a bad writer or you don't know how to, you know, take a photo.
Are
right?
we talking so, about actual shit, like feces, or are we talking about just...
Yes, stuff. It's a painting of shit.
I specifically asked Callie if I could cuss. So, but you know what I mean? So
yeah.
that kind of, like, puts you in this this place of, like, responsibility, and it's a cool little, like, quality control thing, because I find that people, for whatever reason, will, like, read something that I write or see something and, like, you know, I wish I could do that, I just can't. And yeah. I was like, well, what does that even mean? Like, I'm not necessarily good at this, I just kind of spent way too much time doing it, or whatever the case may be, you know. And it's through that kind of, like, this idea of, like, comparing yourself to taste that, like, leads to just a huge volume of work, you know, and yeah. that's how we get good at anything, you know.
Yeah, I like that you said responsibility, but it's not, like, a responsibility from, like, I don't know, like, a marketing or business standpoint. It's more of, like, a responsibility to be, like, authentic. And so yeah. you want, like you said, you want to be represented, since you're doing your own representation. Like, you want to be represented authentically, and that bears a lot of responsibility, and it takes time and it takes effort and it takes time to be able to create images and things that exhibit the brand and exhibit the culture as best as possible, you know, and in the way that's true. So I can definitely understand, you know, where you're going with that.
It sounds like almost like the journey or life cycle for myself in Cali and Texas. We joined on John's seminar staff because we knew the information, but we weren't able to engage with the information. We, you know, John jokingly called us autistic parrots. He's like, you're just saying what I'm saying. Don't say what I'm saying. You know, say what you're saying type deal. And it's a voice, whether it's printed, written, it's spoken at a seminar, you know, that's it. Just the authenticity and your ability to engage an audience. I mean, that's where it all comes down to. And if Callie likes to say fake it till you make it, some people are just bad at faking it. You know, they're going outside the wheelhouse and they're stretching beyond their ethos or their knowledge base, and people can sniff that shit out and just call BS. And those are the people who are just trying to imitate.
Yeah, and like the kind of like the fake it till you make it. I mean, like, just to clarify, like, John's totally Luke's right on when he says John called us like autistic parents for a long time. So what I would do was fake the person that I wanted to be. Like, so I wanted to be authentic. I wanted to be confident for, you know, whatever, to be able to convey the information or the material or whatever. And so I had to literally act like I was those things until I became those things, because everyone goes through that learning curve. And it's just one of those things, even as a coach on a daily basis, you know, a lot of coaches, and I deal with a lot of coaches regularly, who struggle with nothing more, like nothing's holding them back in terms of limiting factors more than confidence. They don't know how to make eye contact with their athletes and get the work done, get the job done, get those athletes from point A to point B, and have confidence in what they're relaying to that person. You just sort of have to imagine yourself as a superhero and basically just act that way, be that way until you suddenly become that way. So. Right.
I know you obviously were like making a joke about like the Logan factor thing. You know, I think one of the biggest takeaways from like my time in college, like we had a really good program where I played University of San Diego, and like the big takeaway was like this idea of organizational culture, right? So like team sports do it really well. So, you know, some organizations do it well, but like, you know, I think we've all played for incredible teams where there's a culture that is like kind of everywhere all the time. It's not like a team captain thing. It's not a coach thing or whatever. And it's kind of this presence that polices the unit, you know. And I think the gym has done that really well, and that has nothing to do with me really, or, you know, specific leadership. It's more of like there's this idea of a place where people, whether they're students or coaches, kind of like walk in and they need to like play up to this like standard, right, that is there. And that's not because I or anybody else has to like tell them to do that. It's this like culture that's been created, and that I think is like the big intangible, like in terms of something that can go on forever and perpetuate and grow and influence other people, you know?
Yeah. That identity and people just always wanting to identify with something. And you've definitely like latched onto that. And in the most positive way too. And it's not like, it's very obvious that you're not like the Walmart of gyms, you know, both in terms of like the look of the gym and the feel of the environment and stuff. But I think it's great. And people, if they're not familiar, should visit your site, which is
thedeuce.com.
Deucegym.com, DEUCE gym.
Yeah.
I've been
just
saying
to get ideas. Yeah, you certainly have. So Rob, let me ask you, I want to peer into the man that is Rob Orlando, and yeah. I want to know what it is that you do outside of the gym. What are some of your interests? What did you do for your 40th birthday? What are your biggest fears? Tell me what your biggest regret. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow, we're getting deep here.
Yeah.
I have a real interest in things that have motors. I like anything that goes fast. So I love going snowmobiling. That's what I did this past winter a lot. I've got the only thing that I spend money on, really, is cars. So I've gone through just far too many cars that I can count off. I love cars. I just signed myself up for a bunch of track days this summer, so I'm gonna learn actually from a professional driver how to get out on the track and do some racing. I'm married for 16 years. I've been with my wife for 26 years. We've been, you know, I've got a 9 and a 6-year-old, so husband, father, gym owner, and now, you know, there's this tech platform that I'm a part of, and it's just something completely different. It scares the hell out of me, but it's a new venture that I'm involved with. You know, I like Game of Thrones. I think it's one of the best shows on television. And I mean, that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Cool. And can you point us in the direction of some must-see movies or informative, or not informative, but inspirational? Like, do you ever, I mean, you like Game of Thrones, but we're like kind of like movie people here, and we like, well, I'll call them films. I'll give them like the benefit of the doubt, but something that's inspiring, or maybe it's just brain candy and it sucks ass, like all the Fast movies.
You shut your mouth.
I'm a huge fan of the Lord of the Rings movies. I know it makes me, but I don't care. I love them. I think the first one is the best one. So I'm a huge fan of that kind of film. We'll call it film.
Yeah. Yeah, those are. I'm on board with that. Those are phenomenal movies. So yeah, I will never forget the first time I saw the very first one. It was very similar to my Star Wars experience. But Logan, how about you? What keeps you occupied outside the gym? I know you probably don't have a lot of free time, much like Rob. But what are you into, and what are some movies that you would recommend?
Man, I'm super busy, dude. I don't really know what I do for a living, but you know, we have the gym. Obviously, traveling with the seminars. I own a company called Original Nutritionals. We do kind of clean athlete things, supplements. I kind of just like to soak up the Venice thing. I would like to professionally drink coffee one day. Mm-hmm. That's about it. I live here in Venice with my girlfriend, Lindsay, and kind of between that and the gym and all that, I'm tied up.
Well, as a semi-professional coffee drinker, I will say the life is good when you get a chance to do it. You really should when you retire.
But what happens when you have to give it up?
nothing. I would never. I wouldn't even dream of it.
Coffee? Don't ever. Wasn't that like a month ago?
Oh yeah, I had to get off coffee for like a week and. I mean, listen, I survived it. It was fine.
Yeah, but we barely did. John and I had to live through that too, you know.
Dude, I mean, can you imagine going off coffee? Like, it just...
No.
It's just fucking dumb. And I wasn't even, like, physically affected by it, but it was just fucking dumb. It was a stupid thing. you know, I can't... I don't recommend it.
Logan, Rob, I've got a question for you. Yeah. I can see after people, you know, go to the seminar, even, you know, probably even contract you for consultation on how do I start strongman into my gym. Part question. Why someone can't implement strongman or follow it personally? And then two, I would imagine that you guys see some pretty bitchin' like do-it-yourself home gyms, whether it's via traveling or people sending you like, hey, look, crazy people hack together for a strongman setup.
Luke, your audio is a complete abortion. Can you just say the first part of your question one more time, Luke?
Can you be more specific on the abortion? Is it choppy? Is it loud? Is it static?
It's choppy. Just stand in one place and just ask the first part again.
All right, I'm sitting. Should I try standing?
Yeah, get a little closer to that question. Satellite.
Yeah, first question. Let's see. I guess what is people, you know, as you got to travel the world and they're seen as experts on strongman, people have probably consulted you on starting a strongman program personally or commercially at their gym, but come up with some sort of barrier or excuse why they can't and why they're special and why their situation is unique. What is the lamest thing that you guys have heard in terms of someone being unable unable to start a strongman program, either personally or for their gym?
I actually have two answers on that. So one, it oftentimes turns to finances, and people will say, oh, I don't have the money, if it's too expensive. And I will immediately turn that right back around in their face and say, how many Concept 2 rowers do you have? And this isn't a knock on Concept 2. So, but I'll say, how many Concept 2s? They're like 12. And I was like, okay, those are $12,000 of rowers. Do you know how many yokes you could buy for $12,000? And do you know how many different exercises it does? Do you know how multi-purposed it is? Do you know how many Atlas stones you can make with $12,000? You could give them up. You could sell Atlas stones to everybody in your area, in your zip code. $12,000 is just an obscene amount of money to spend on a piece of equipment that does one exercise and serves one person at a time. When if you pour some Atlas stones, you've got an unlimited number of exercises. The only limiting factor is your own creativity. And you can make, if you happen to break one in the event that you do, to re-pour an Atlas stone is pennies. So I turn that right back around in their face. The second thing is my members won't buy into it. And that's just complete and utter bullshit. It comes from the top down. The management, the owners of the gym need to believe in it. And the second part of that is that people say, well, how do I get my female members to buy into it? Because, you know, my gym is half men, half women. The most important thing I tell people is you need to find that one key, influential, loudmouth female in your gym, and you need to get her to support it. Because if you get her on board, everybody else will follow suit. All her girlfriends will jump in, and it will become the cool thing to do. So those are the two things that those are the two excuses that I hear all the time. I don't know about you, Logan.
That pretty much crushes it. I mean, it's just not a thing. You know, like someone starts to talk about that, and you're like, that's not true. That's not real.
Okay, so let's jump back then to kind of the finance deal, and I would think that there's a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there who put together some pretty elaborate strongman contraptions or setups or kits or whatever. What's some of the craziest or most innovative stuff you've seen since? I think you guys, I mean, Rob, I've followed your search schedule. You've been all over the world, so I'm sure you've seen a lot of crazy stuff out there.
Yeah, I think I saw in Australia once, I saw a yoke that was rigged together with PVC pipe, and plastic PVC pipe. I just thought, how can you think that this is going to survive? How can you think this is not dangerous? But Logan, I'll let you jump in on that one, because I'm sure you've seen some funny stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of cool stuff, up at Rainier, they have, like, car deadlift simulators that are made out of, like, redwoods, like, massive trees with, like, handles on them, and wow. It's, like, right out front, you can't miss it type of thing. But just most of the stuff is, everybody finds their, like, weird uncle that's, like, a welder, you know, and so, like, you see, like, all these, you know, attempts at like a log or something, you know, and it's not finished and you can like, you know, slit your own wrist trying to use it. And it's just all that stuff, which is like awesome to see people, you know, every video and photo of people's garage gyms is like half inspiring, half scary. You know, it's everybody's network of welders, I think is what
it's not just weird uncles about. Though. Like I welded a prowler myself.
Of course you did, Kelly.
So I welded a prowler. This was probably like 5 years ago. And I mean, this thing was solid. It was like a tack welder. It was like a little handy MIG. And I took it out on the road, and with one push, every single seam that I had welded completely cracked. So I don't think that the little welder that I had was going to do the job, but it was probably like one of the more devastating moments in my life, because I put like days and a lot of money into the metal that was acquired, and then you obviously have to cut the metal and you have to buy the blades to cut the metal, and that is expensive as well. And so it was pretty heart wrenching. I had to throw it away because I realized I couldn't afford a big enough welder. But yeah, I am that weird uncle for sure. Sadly. You guys, I don't know if Bobby or Denny or Tex has any other questions. You guys have anything you want to hit on?
Mayweather or Pacquiao this weekend?
Go ahead, Ro.
Well, I was gonna say I'm so far removed, but I guess I think I heard that P. Diddy put $1.6 million on Mayweather. So I'm gonna go in that direction.
What would Diddy do?
Do you think Diddy knows something we don't know?
Watch it, Luke. Ingle might get upset because you're taking his puns.
Yeah. Diddy, so, Bobby, you think Diddy has some inside info?
I don't know. Diddy might know something we don't know.
Diddy knows a shit ton that we don't know, but I don't know if it has to do with boxing.
No, I don't have any. I don't have any other questions. I was really interested to talk about the cold bar training, and I'm happy that that was a big talking point today.
Yeah, cool. Good. Well, you guys, where can we go to find out more information? Rob, where would you point people in the direction to get signed up for seminars or to learn more about hybrid athletics?
Yeah, for seminars, it's just we use CrossFit.com because our seminars are changing so quickly and we add so many so quickly that's the one place where they're updated the fastest. So CrossFit.com, and then you go to the trainers courses. To look and see what we're doing at Hybrid Athletics, it's hybridathletics.net. And then I post workouts every day to strongmanwad.com. And that's become a great resource for anybody who's experimenting with different strongman movements and wants to play around with it. There's a very cool search box there so that if you only have access to a pair of farmer's handles, you can type farmer's handles in, and every workout that I've programmed for the last several years with that piece of equipment will pop up. So strongmanwad.com is a great place for people to, you know, if you're starting to look around and experiment with different programs. I always say it's nothing more than a workout resource. I look at the web every day, try to find some inspiration somewhere. So if anybody's looking for different workouts, hybridathletics.net and strongmanwad.com.
Nice. And Logan, I want to point people in the direction of Original Nutritionals because, first of all, you guys have great products. You know, you were kind enough to send us some, and we've been using the fish oil. I know John uses it regularly, and it doesn't taste bad. It actually doesn't really have a flavor. And Luke actually had to, I don't know, correct me one day because I think I was taking way more fish oil than I was supposed to. I eyeball it, and when I eyeball something, it's like at least, you know, 20 times the normal dosage. But it's good stuff. So where can they go to check that out?
Yeah, y'all can go to originalnutritionals.com. There's some cool info up there. There's a blog, and all the products are there as well. I do want to mention, Rob and I are doing a tour the week after the CrossFit Games. If you're in California, we're starting down south, and we're in a van driving north with a bunch of strongman gear and beer, and we're stopping at gyms along the way, and I think it'll be a really fun week for people to come out and have some fun, do a little clinic, and socialize together too. So
yeah, absolutely.
Do you have your schedule finalized for that yet? Like, is that posted out on your guys' site?
I have a couple more things to finish, and then I'll be posting a poster kind of with all the stops and the dates and all that, so that'll be done here shortly.
Yeah, I know we're on the waiting list. We're still in line to get into the club. I know you guys were thinking of hitting us up on the way back from the games. So, you know, like if we're lucky, maybe we'll get like a look or something. But yeah, just hit us up if you guys get here, and then obviously we'll push that out on our site.
Sweet.
And if anybody's interested, we have some tracks, workout tracks that these two fellows like to train to, and I'm not going to get into it now because we don't have a lot of time, but they certainly are interesting. So I'm gonna post those up with the show, and you guys can whoever's listening can train like Rob Orlando or train like Logan Gelbrick. So you know, we'll try to empower people's performance through that. Just wanted to thank you guys though as we wrap up. Thanks for taking the time out to bullshit with us on Power Athlete Radio.
Thank you guys. This is crazy.
Thank you guys.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Be sure to head to CrossFit.com to sign up for a CrossFit Strongman Seminar ASAP. Want to up your strongman training game?
Strongmanwad.com and hybridathletics.net are your resources for workouts, training blogs, and equipment. No training and recovery is complete without the fuel to keep your machine running happy and healthy. Be sure to check out originalnutritionals.com and tell them Callie sent you. Actually, don't say that because literally no one will know what you're talking about. Don't forget that these guys are hitting the road soon. Rob and Logan are planning their epic road trip around the CrossFit Games, so follow them on social media to find out how you can sling kegs and drink beers with two professional badasses. Next week, we welcome Jim Laird of GYMLaird.com. This former roomie of Jim Wendler talks powerlifting, training, meditation, and why 90% of his athletes are female. So he must be doing something right. Until then, bye! Oh, my smoking.